taken under advisement. And we move to the third case this morning, Armato versus Grounds.
May it please the court, my name is Dennis DeCaro. I represent plaintiff appellant David Armato.
I think there's a button on there to raise the platform a little bit.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you.
There we go. Makes it easier for both of us.
Thank you. It is our position that the district court erred by granting summary judgment to the defendants in this case, and we'd ask that that be reversed and remanded. This is not a case where there was a miscalculation of good times or time served credits for Mr. Armato, who was a prisoner in the Robinson Correctional Center during the relevant time period. This is not a case where there was a dispute as to his release time, his release date. Mr. Armato, pro se, went to court in Lake County. He got, unfortunately, three orders regarding his release. There's no dispute between the defendants that once they calculated his good time, his time served, and his day-for-day credit, he should have been released on August 23rd, 2009. He went to court on February 18th, 2010, got those orders, returned to the Robinson Correctional Center. The court then sent two of the three orders to the Robinson Correctional Center. They were received on February 22nd, 2010. I'll be discussing mainly defendants Jackson and Huntley. I'm not waiving the arguments regarding the other defendants, but it's clear that defendants Jackson and Huntley had the authority to release Mr. Armato and were the decision makers. I'm not abandoning the arguments against the other defendants, but for brevity and for the sake of this argument, I'm going to address those two defendants. They acknowledged that the release date should have been August 23rd, 2009. They admit that the only way they can imprison people is based upon the court orders. They acknowledge that they don't have the authority to not follow the court orders they receive. They decided to consciously disregard this court order because it said no MSR for Mr. Armato. Mr. Huntley testified at page 32 of his deposition that when all alternatives are exhausted without any favorable action to our way of thinking, then we're going to obey the judge's orders. That's the fear here, is that prison officials start deciding which court orders they obey and which court orders they don't obey. Mr. Jackson also testified that there was nothing that Mr. Armato could have done to gain his release other than wait for Mr. Jackson or Huntley to decide to release him. The problem arises with these court orders. The district court relied on a court order that no one testified that they saw or received. There was an agreed handwritten order, and then there were two judgment sentenced to the Illinois Department of Correction orders that were sent to Miss Littlejohn at the Robinson Correctional Center. She testified and referred to these two documents as the orders that controlled Mr. Armato's fate. Mr. Jackson referred to them to minimis, but there's no dispute that these two documents that were sent controlled his fate. The district court determined that the handwritten document that no one testified to, that apparently was never received by the Robinson Correctional Center, controlled Mr. Armato's fate, and he relies on it because It says Mr. Omada shall be released from the Department of Correction without a term of MSR on Friday, May 28, 2010. It is our position that that was a preliminary order, and the reason why we come to that conclusion is because it gives him some additional credit, and it says amend the minimus with adding these 69 additional days. So this was not the final order. The handwritten order couldn't have been the final handwritten order. The two judgment orders that go to the Department of Correction provide for 373 days of time served.
Right, that was physically impossible, right? That figure?
I don't believe so.
He couldn't possibly have had that kind of pretrial credit.
Well, there was a period. What happened was he was in Lake County Jail, and they converted from paper to computer, and they lost those documents. There was an arrest in 2005, and then he isn't convicted until March of 06, I believe, and then we don't know where he goes after that. I don't know where he is between that period and when he goes to the Department of Corrections.
Right, but he's not in custody that whole time because he's out committing the second theft.
Well, there is some testimony that Ms. Littlejohn gets some court documents saying that he is remanded each time he goes to court. So it's in this.
He cannot possibly have been in custody for that length of time because he's out committing a second theft on December 30th of 2005.
Right. At some point, he is released.
Right. So that number. I mean, there's two anomalies in the printed judgment: the issue of the MSR, and the number of pretrial credit days, which is physically impossible based on the chronology of events here, and when he committed the two thefts. So while there's a legitimate question about whether the prison authorities had the authority to disregard these and take the matter into their own hands and do this bizarre procedure of violating at the door and all of that kind of stuff, what we have as an agreed order between the parties is that at the very earliest he's due to be released on Friday, May 28th, 2010.
Right.
And that's captioned as an agreed order, so it's in the nature of a contract.
Well, even though it's captioned as an agreed order, Judge, I don't think it diminishes the effect of the other two orders, which are then sent to the Department of Corrections. Even if you go by this order, the handwritten order, does not contain any time served that they refer to, give him an additional 69 days, and then it's it says in paragraph 1, defendant receives this in addition to the original credit for time served. We don't know that amount. The other fact is he was given 6 months good time credit, which wouldn't have been factored into this order. So the district court categorized these two other orders and disregarded them because he said there'd be voodoo sentencing calculations. But any order the correctional center would receive would go through those calculations. They would look at all time served. They would look at any good time credit. So the date of May 28, 2010 wouldn't stand whether you rely on this order or not.
But he agreed to it. That's the import of the document. And so he can't come into court and argue that he was entitled to be released earlier when he entered or had entered this agreed order that he was to be released on May 28th, 2010.
Well, that's one of the issues, is there a factual dispute as to that this order was then not then incorporated into these two judgments, whether the 373 days is accurate or not accurate. It would be our position that these two judgments, which controlled his fate, were subsequent to and incorporated this agreed order. And that this date, although agreed under the day-to-day activity and how the prison systems worked, wouldn't always stand. Let's say I am sentenced today of 10 years, and we say May 29th, 2024, I'm going to be released, and that's in the order. When I'm sent to the Department of Corrections, I'm going to then, subsequent to the sentencing, be given my good time, be giving any day's credit that I have served before today.
Right. I mean, typically, judgments of conviction don't state a release date, right?
Correct.
So this is an unusual agreed order.
Correct.
That was entered because of the very unusual circumstances of this case, because documents were lost and so forth. But that having been said, it is an agreement by him that he is entitled to be released no earlier than that date, and he can't really take that back now.
Judge, I would say that that document doesn't control, one, and two, no one in this case ever received this document, which raises another issue as to why not. Ms. Littlejohn gets the two judgment of sentences on February 22, 2010. She sees the no MSR, and that raises a red flag. She then calls ASA Eric Collada at the Lake County State's Attorney's Office and discusses the matter with him. And they discuss the intent the judge had for entering no MSR. At no point is it ever raised that there's a handwritten order or that there is a specific out date, which again would lead us to believe that this may have been a preliminary order that they used to incorporate into the subsequent orders with his time served and his good time.
Who is CP Haran APD?
I would assume it's the public defender. I have no idea.
That's who prepared this document.
I believe so. Any respect, Judge, the orders are in dispute. What happens then, once these orders, any one of these, become in dispute, the defendants have an obligation to follow the orders they're given by the court. Whether, in this case, they may have been inaccurate, but they received these orders, they calculated his out date based on the orders they received, and they determined that he should have been out the prior August.
But they also, as I understand the record, consulted with the Attorney General.
Well, that goes to the
The
Eighth Amendment and the due process. They did do that. And our position would be that is not an adequate process and that it was done with deliberate indifference. There really was an ad hoc procedure here. If Ms. Littlejohn got an order that was out of the ordinary, her understanding was she was to call Mr. Jackson. Mr. Jackson then would determine what to do, and in this case he called Mr. Huntley, who was the chief legal counsel for the Department of Corrections. Mr. Huntley then called the Attorney General's office. This is not, they didn't testify that this was standard operating procedure, that this was in a written policy or procedure. This is just what happened in this particular case and in some cases where they get an order out of the ordinary. The problem with that procedure, Judge, is then when the Department of, when the Attorney General's office gets this, there's no policy procedure of what to do then. Mr. Huntley testified he would have waited for an indefinite period of time for the Attorney General's office to decide what to do here. Our position would be, when you get a situation in this particular situation where your employee has calculated the out date several months earlier and you're disputing one of the terms of the order, the alternative would be to release Mr. Armato. If the Attorney General then decides...
Would it be possible to go back to the judge for clarification?
Yes, that's another option, Judge. But in this case...
You're
Mr.
in
Armato,
your rebuttal. I just thought I'd let you know.
Thank you, Judge. In this situation, Mr. Armato would have had to have gone back to court and said, I got too favorable of an order. I need an order that is more onerous on me. And it's just not reasonable for him to have done that.
I didn't suggest that he go back to the court. But if you want a clarification of the order that's you can't understand because you're the one who got to execute it, you can ask the judge.
Correct. The government could have asked
the
judge, and that would have been a reasonable procedure, but that procedure wasn't in place.
Why don't you go park yourself and wait for the next...
Thank you, Judge.
Good is it the standard, I jump right in, is the standard operating position of the government that if the prison officials disagree with the disposition, they change the order?
That they change the order, Your Honor?
Yeah. That they ignore the order and set up their own program?
I don't believe the record contains any reflection of a standard procedure. No, Your Honor.
Well, I was asking you, is there such a thing?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. No.
So that under normal circumstances, the prison people follow the rules as set forth by the court?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's correct.
Did that happen in this case?
That did happen in this case, Your Honor.
There's the order that says hold them?
I'm sorry?
Is there an order that said adding up his time, he's entitled to a release at a particular time, regardless of what it says after that? Was he supposed to be released at a different date than the one he was released on?
He was supposed to be released 1 week later than the date that he was released on. And yes, so Your Honor. Thank you.
So he didn't lose anything, you say?
He didn't lose
anything. There's no single order requiring him to be discharged earlier than he was?
There is not, Your Honor.
Okay.
No.
Why are we here, then?
That's a terrific question, and the district court asked that question as well. And first, good morning, Your Honors, and may it please this court. I'm Timothy Maggio, an assistant attorney general, and this morning I represent the five defendant appellees. And may I pick up with that order? The district court did two things, Your Honor, in the alternative. First, the district court determined that Mr. Armato was not held beyond his proper release date. Second, alternatively, putting the agreed order aside, the district court concluded that there's no Eighth Amendment violation when prison officials, on the very afternoon they learn of an issue, begin to research that issue, investigate it, contact the Attorney General, and try to sort it out. Those are the two alternative holdings, and I'll come back to that in a moment. But first, the agreed order, if I may. Your Honors are exactly right. There was an agreed order in this case. There were disputes, as Your Honors know. There were disputes and questions during Mr. Armato's stay, partly because of the Lake County records being destroyed, etc. So it was difficult to determine his proper release date. The Department of Corrections advised Mr. Armato that it might be a good idea to go back into Lake County and get a correcting order. And he did. And the clarifying order did three things. One, it said that he was entitled to 69 days of additional time for time served. It said he was not admonished about mandatory supervised release, or as we call MSR. And then it concluded, as Your Honors have pointed out, puts a ribbon on the whole thing and put it at the bottom, it concludes, Mr. Armato shall be released from the Department of Corrections without a term of MSR on Friday, May 28, 2010. Mr. Armato was in fact released on May 21st, 2010 with no MSR. The district judge sat back and said, I don't know why we're here. There's no injury, there's no violation, there's no basis for a 1983 action. Mr. Armato agreed. And by the way, he was represented by counsel. I think Counsel Pellin may have misspoken and said he was pro se. He was represented by the public defender, and as Your Honor pointed out, it was the public defender that drafted the agreed order on behalf of Mr. Armato.
Why was he released a week early?
You know, Your Honor, I don't know, except to say that the appellants said that, you know, this third order was not delivered to the Department of Corrections, which appears to be the case. He was released a week early because they were working with the other amended judgments, and as soon as, in fact, the very day, and this ties into the Eighth Amendment argument as well, on the very day that Mr. Huntley advised Mr. Jackson and Ms. Littlejohn that the Attorney General's office was not interested in pursuing a correction, Mr. Armato was released. So he was released a week early because that was the day that the Attorney General's office said we're not going to pursue any change. So there's no reason to keep him imprisoned any longer. Let me just go back, though, and talk just a few seconds about the agreed order as well. You know, as the court has pointed out, the district court focuses on the agreed order. Mr. Armato in the district court did not respond to those arguments. And so with respect, we have also suggested to Your Honors that there's a waiver issue here. The argument was raised in our summary judgment papers below. Mr. Armato did not respond. There's a hint in his reply brief that he did respond, but I think that's not accurate, and I would refer Your Honors to Docket 26. As Your Honors know, Mr. Armato, when all of the summary judgment briefing was completed, Mr. Armato filed a motion to strike or in the alternative for leave to file a surreply to talk exactly about this agreed order issue, if you will, however you best want to describe it. And in his papers, he said to the court, I mean, he said to the court, let me see if I can't get these words right. He said that this was a new argument, never raised before the reply brief, raised for the first time in the reply brief, and he said to the court, if I don't get a chance to file the surreply, then this entire argument, were his words, go unanswered. He didn't respond to it in the district court, and it's worth pointing out, the district court denied his motion to strike or, in the alternative, for leave to file a surreply, and he has not appealed that decision here either. So he didn't respond to the summary judgment papers. We believe it's a default based on procedure. The district court denied
his
motion.
I still don't know where. Was there any ignoring of a court order by your clients or any part of the government?
No, Your Honor. The
unequivocal no. Every order of the court was followed assiduously by the government.
Let me be clear on that, Your Honor. The prison officials saw the amended judgments that said no MSR,
right.
No mandatory super release.
Yeah.
They understood that to be an incorrect order.
Well, yeah, but it's not their business to correct incorrect orders.
No, it's not their business to do it, but it is their business to seek a correction, which is what they did. That very day, the very day they received the amended judgments, they contacted the Department of Corrections legal department, and the legal department advised them of two things. One, that the no MSR order was incorrect, and two, that they should contact the Attorney General's office to get that order corrected, amended. That very afternoon, right, they have this information. The next day, Ms. Littlejohn and Mr. Jackson contact Mr. Huntley.
Hey, you said that.
Who's the liaison. He then has, over the next many weeks, a number of conversations, according to the testimony, with the Attorney General's office trying to get the matter resolved. So at least, you know, as respect these defendants and the Eighth Amendment issue, which I guess is the one we're talking about now, the question is, did they exhibit deliberate indifference? And I would suggest to the court, that we have cited authority, that when prison officials see an order that they believe to be incorrect, and they begin an investigation that very day, and pursue it diligently until resolution, and particularly, by the way, when they ask for the assistance of the State Attorney General's office, the district court was correct to say that on that undisputed record, you simply cannot find that there was deliberate indifference.
Why is that the right standard here?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Why is that the right standard here? I'm having some difficulty lodging the right that was allegedly violated here in the Eighth Amendment. It seems more appropriate as a false imprisonment claim or a due process, not procedural due process, but substantive due process in the sense that his liberty was deprived for the period of time he spent in prison after this printed order said he should have been released.
Yes. I believe the authority of this court, and I'm thinking right now of the Campbell case, I think the Campbell case suggests that when an inmate alleges that he or she was kept over past his or her release date due to deliberate indifference, that does allege an Eighth Amendment claim. I think that's probably the origin of it. Your Honor is correct, though, to point out the false imprisonment aspect of this as well, because that actually then quickly ties into the due process claim that we didn't really hear about yet this morning. The district court determined not only that there was no Eighth Amendment violation, but also that there was no due process violation here. And what we really have, Mr. Amato alleges that prison officials did their job poorly, that they were mistaken, and that they acted unauthorized. As Your Honor points out, that they got some orders that said they were supposed to be let go, and what they decided to do, whether you want to call it that they didn't pay attention to it or they wanted to investigate it, they thought the order was wrong and they wanted help from the Attorney General's office to work through what their obligations were. But that's probably the best way to say that. And Mr. Amato alleges that when they did that, they acted mistakenly, without authority, and denied him due process. That type of allegation, employees who act mistakenly and who act without authority, sort of fits squarely within the Parrott versus Taylor line of constitutional tort. And that's where the district court held correctly that where there are state post-deprivation remedies in the nature of mandamus or in the nature of, as Your Honor points out, a claim for false imprisonment, that those state remedies provide all the process that's due.
That's to the extent that the claim sounds in procedural due process.
Correct,
to the extent
Your Honor.
That this is a liberty deprivation within the core of the due process clause. then we've got a different inquiry. He was deprived of liberty for potentially 6 months after he was supposed to be released, not by the absence of sufficient process, but by arbitrary and capricious action of the prison officials.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Maybe I could answer it this way. I mean, first, we do have this sort of recognized body of law in this circuit and others that treat these types of issues as Eighth Amendment issues. And to the extent that someone wants to characterize it as maybe a substantive due process issue, I don't think that it arises to the nature of sort of the level of outrageous conduct that one would need.
Well, the procedure of violating at the door is pretty outrageous. I don't know if it's ever been sanctioned by the Illinois courts, or do they just do this?
Your Honor, I believe that there is a recent litigation over violating at the door, and that there has been determined that it is no constitutional violation there. I don't have the particulars of that, Your Honor, but I believe that there's a litigation in the district court to that effect.
Well, what is it about Illinois law that authorizes this? Is there something in Illinois law that authorizes this, or are they just doing this unilaterally?
No, Your Honor. It has to do with sort of a cycle that's actually built into the law. The Prison Review Board reviews, in this particular case, Mr. Armato was violated at the door. The Prison Review Board takes a look at that. It determines only, sort of a limited question, it determines whether there was a probation or MSR violation. Finding a violation can have all sorts of negative consequences for an inmate. You know, it could lead to loss of good time credit, additional time. But the release document, as we've quoted in our papers, the release document says that there was, although in this case there was no technical violation, the PBR, Prison Review Board, rather, PRB described it as a placement issue. It then says Mr. Armato should be treated or released according to the terms of his mandatory supervised release. And so that puts it back into the hands of the Department of Corrections, and the Department of Corrections says, well, except his mandatory supervised release, since he's a sex offender in this case, his mandatory supervised release requires that he go to a host site that has electronic monitoring. And since he didn't have one of those, the Department of Corrections is essentially back to where it was in the first instance. We have somebody who's a sexual offender and who has no host site with appropriate monitoring, and so there's nothing we can do except say that, you know, as he's being released, he is violating the terms of his MSR.
And Illinois law permits this? Permits the prison to hold him beyond his release date?
Well, I mean, I guess the question in this case was whether there is any Illinois authority that says that he can't do that, and that really sort of ties into the qualified immunity question, I think, Your Honor. Right? And here, the district court determined that these defendants were entitled to qualified immunity. There, the obligation was on Mr. Armato to point out law, cases, some authority that says no reasonable public official would have thought.
Now, I'm asking a question of Illinois state law, not a constitutional question or a qualified immunity question. What in Illinois state law permits prison officials to hold inmates beyond their release date by way of this violating at the door technique?
I think the most direct answer I can give to Your Honor is that it's the responsibility of the Department of Corrections, as they're releasing an inmate, to make sure that inmate is, if he or she requires electronic monitoring, that they're being released to a site that has electronic monitoring. If not, they cannot release that.
So they're responsible not only for holding him in custody, but the supervised release. Department of Corrections is.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, yes. I believe that's correct. And so when we get, and it does tie into the question of qualified immunity, if I will, because the district court put the burden on Mr. Armato to say, where is there some law that says, show me some law that says prison officials act unconstitutionally, act incorrectly when they do either of two things. One, when they treat a prisoner who's supposed to have MSR as having MSR. And two, when they detain that prisoner while they contact the state attorney general's office trying to figure out what the correct treatment is, how to remedy the order.
Did they ask him, the defendant, for the location to meet that met these requirements for mandatory supervised release? Is that how it popped up, or what?
That's correct, Your Honor. The prison authorities calculated Mr. Armato's release date, saw that it had no MSR. They believed he did need to have MSR, but they did ask him whether he had a host site that would have electronic monitoring.
But the problem is it did say no MSR, though.
The orders did say no MSR. Yes, Your Honor.
Whose responsibility is it to find a placement site with electronic monitoring?
I believe in the first instance it's the inmate's responsibility, but that said, the Department of Corrections has a unit that tries to assist inmates finding host sites with electronic monitoring.
So the inmate has to set up his own MSR plan? I believe in the
first instance the ultimate obligation is on the inmate to have an appropriate host site. What I am saying, though, is my understanding is that the Department of Corrections itself has a department that's entrusted, if you will, is probably the best way to say it, to assist inmates in finding it. There are, I think, only a number of host sites in the state that do have electronic monitoring sufficient to have a sexual offender. And so the Department of Corrections assists inmates in locating one of those.
To get back, I guess, more fundamentally, was there ever a judgment entry, an official judgment entry? This is Lake County?
Yes, Your Honor.
In the records of Lake County, the report in Lake County, as to what the final judgment in this case was?
I believe the last three orders that we have in Lake County are the three orders that we're talking about.
So we got three orders, not just one.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. Yes. I see that my time is over. The court doesn't have any further questions. We would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you,
counsel. You have 1 minute, counsel, but we'll give you a couple.
Thank you, Judge. I just do want to address a couple issues. The waiver issue, how that arose was on the motion for summary judgment, the defendants framed their issues. They didn't argue that the agreed order controlled the day. What they argued were that all three orders were void, and that's what I was responding to in my response brief. In their reply brief, they then argue, well, the handwritten order controls. That's how that arose. I don't believe I waived it in the lower court because it wasn't raised initially. Their initial argument...
Can we go back and look for the official record when we go to the clerk's office? Give us a judgment order in that case. And there it is, but now there are three of them?
That is the problem, Judge. There were three orders, and two orders, not the handwritten order, was sent to the Department of Corrections. They then do their calculations. They determine this man should have been let out months earlier, and Mr. Jackson and Huntley decide we are not going to obey that order. We're going to ask the Attorney General's office what we should do, knowing full well that his release date should have been August of 2009. Regarding the host site and the MSR, the testimony is uncontradicted from Ms. Littlejohn, Mr. Jackson, and Mr. Huntley, that if there is no MSR, Mr. Amato did not need a host site. The parole board found that he wasn't a violator. The parole board told Ms. Littlejohn, you're going to have a lawsuit here.
No, you're right about that.
Yeah. So Mr. Amato did not need a host site if they were going to release him with no MSR, which they ultimately did release him with no MSR, and their whole condition for holding him for those months from February to May was because of the no MSR, which they ultimately agreed with.
But the no MSR order itself is illegal.
Well, I don't know, Judge. The Lake County Court issued the order with no MSR. The district court did not find that order to be void, but said it controlled the situation with no MSR, and the Attorney General's office refused to take the case on to find that the order was illegal.
Well, what does Illinois law say about
issue? Illinois statute requires an MSR. However, the courts have... and People v. Whitfield have, when the defendant had not been admonished about MSR, they fashion a way to back in the MSR into his incarceration period. There, he was given 25 years. He was supposed to do 3 years of MSR. They said, well, we'll make it 22 years and move the 3 years of MSR. But that required a court order, which the state did not seek here.
Well, he's bound. The only thing he's bound by is the court order. He isn't bound by the statute, which may be contradictory to it, but he's got the order.
Right. Well, and the problem is there's three orders here, Judge.
Three orders.
We respectfully request that the motion for summary judgment be reversed and remanded. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.